Time to take a look at climate and weather with our weather guys. Well, we got a weather guy right now, Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Steve, welcome back.
It's great to be here.
Did I get you? Oh, wait a minute. Now we're better that I've turned the right microphone.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, that sounds better. Yes, it's good to be here. And actually able to be heard.
Yeah, it's nice to have you heard as well. Well, I tell you what, John Martin will be with us in about 10 minutes or so. He's finishing up a class, professor, former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. But Steve Ackerman is perfectly capable of talking about weather and climate.
I am perfectly capable, right?
And I hope you'll join in with your own weather questions, something unusual that you've seen you want to comment about, maybe just a question about weather or climate. Join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And we've got a weather photo. We always love to see those as well on our Facebook page. So post those up as well. Let's take a look at the month of January. It's actually turned out to be a little colder than normal.
Yeah, it turned out to be, right now it's about a couple of degrees colder than normal. Not something I thought. I thought maybe we'd be about normal, maybe a little bit above. But when I checked this morning at the climate site, yeah, where southern Wisconsin's running a couple of degrees below normal. And for the wintertime, we're pretty dry, too, as probably most people recognize with regard to lack of snowfall.
Yeah, there's been, and I don't know, the south has certainly had not had the snowfall. North, I'm not sure about.
This last couple of weeks, they've had some storms to go through to help bring up the January mean snowfall amount. So throughout the year, they're still below in terms of the snow season. But this last couple of storms that went through have helped for sure.
I always think about the spring thaw and the spring potential for spring flooding. And with some parts of the state where there wasn't much snow, the frost has got to be down.
It's got to be deeper, right, yeah.
It's got to be a
lot. So if we get
deeper.
That rain, I mean, even if we don't have the snowfall, if you get a heavy rain and a frozen ground, that'll lead to potential flooding for sure.
So we had colder January, but overall, if we look at the temperatures, we're still warmer, are we not?
Pretty much for the winter season. November was above normal. And December, we went out really cold, but also early December was pretty warm. Even this January, we've had some interesting things. We had 3 days in which the temperature was above 50 degrees, which is kind of odd.
It is kind of odd. You wonder about this. I mean, do we always get, I know in January, there's usually a time when there's a little warm spell.
Right. That's right. Yep. And that's usually around in the 20s.
In the 20s.
And with the regard to that 50-degree days, the record has been 4. That's the most we've had, and we had 3 this year, almost at 4, but some system came through and got cloudy and kept us in the upper 40s. Very variable in terms of temperature for January so far.
Phil has got a comment or question from someplace here in Wisconsin. Hi, Phil.
Hi, my name is Phil Schweitzer. I'm calling from Shawano. A couple months ago, you guys were talking about the eclipse, the total eclipse that we had, and I remember one of the fellows was lamenting about not going to see it, what it was like. 5 of us went to Lusk, Wyoming, and it was just another worldly experience. It was just incredible. It was a party atmosphere at first, but just before totality, you could have heard a pin drop.
Yeah.
And we went through the thing, celebrated, and on our way back to what we were staying in the Black Hills, it reminded me of something else that had happened to me. When I was in high school in Neenah, Wisconsin, in, I believe, 1964, a tornado took the roof off of the building I was in, and I was in a shopping a store, a food store, and suddenly it got totally quiet. No carts, no cash registers, no nothing. And I looked up, and I saw everybody looking out the window. The cars were dancing, and all of a sudden the roof came off. And that was the same feeling that I had in the seconds before totality as when this tornado hit. It was just a rare coincidence, I guess. But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I think there are these things in Mother Nature, eclipses, Grand Canyon, tornadoes, hurricanes that just make you stop and think, wow, I mean, how small we are.
Tornadoes, fortunately, we don't have any. This time of the year, is there a tornado? Have we ever had one?
We've had one in January. The only month we haven't had one in Wisconsin is in February. And that might be because it's a short month, but but it's very rare. Most of them for us are in the summertime, June in particular.
And you saw the total eclipse.
I saw the total eclipse. Totally amazing to watch. It was nice and clear, so we had a good view in Wyoming as well. And actually, there's a lunar eclipse coming up. Lunar eclipse coming up on Wednesday, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, and we're going to have a kind of a blood red moon.
It's a blue moon because it's when you get two full moons in 1 month, they call the second one a blue moon, and then it's going to be a blood moon because it's a total eclipse and it looks red.
It looks bright red. Not bright red, but it looks red.
It looks red. Yeah, I've seen it before. Sure. There, it's pretty
pretty cool.
Again, another one of those situations where you just look at it and realize, wow, Mother Nature's cool.
Phil, thank you very much for calling. Wait a minute. Do I have another Phil?
Looks like another Phil.
Another Phil in Green Bay. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
So I had a question, kind of random and out there, but whenever I drive from Appleton to Green Bay on the 41 northbound, there's this big power plant on the right side. And it's always, like, going off with these huge, like, steam, almost looks like clouds, just like steam stacks. I was wondering if those could actually ever precipitate, like rain or snow, that sort of thing?
No.
Well, good question, yeah. They themselves, I don't think, would precipitate because they would probably mix with the air too much and go away. But I know that, and I've seen this on satellite images once, and what can happen is the effluent from those towers, if there's a cloud deck just above and it can find its way into the cloud, it can take those cloud droplets, which in the situation that I'm thinking of, it's super cooled liquid water drops. So they're liquid, but they're below freezing. And sometimes in these plumes, there'll be particles that can change that liquid into an ice particle, and then that makes that precipitate out. So you can have what we call these secondary effects, where the plume can get into a cloud that's in the right stage of development that can lead to a precipitation downwind of that, so like a line of precipitation.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
I've seen that once, and I have looked for it over and over again to see it again, but because it really demonstrates that physical process.
Thanks, Phil, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Daniel on Facebook says that he took a ride up to Duluth this weekend, and there's far more snow in Barron, Wisconsin, than there is in Superior, which seems kind of crazy.
But if you look, this goes back to what we were saying about earlier. If you look at the path of these recent snowstorms that went through, they're hitting sort of the north-central part of Wisconsin better than they are in the Superior area up there.
You'd think you'd get a little more lake effect, though, up there.
Yeah, but you only get the lake effect snow if it's in the right direction, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And for Superior, it's probably got to come out of the northeast, you know, to get that big fetch to really get a bunch of precipitation.
Overall, across the country, in terms of our climate in terms of our weather last year, or do we have the data yet on that?
Last year, I know globally we're up warmer than, you know, on the global temperature average. I think it's the third again in the record books behind 2016 and 2012 or 2015. So, again, we're continuing that global trend of having above normal temperatures, warming.
And somebody else was wondering, again, when we started to talk about it a little bit, where you've got 50 degrees and then it's zero, and, you know, you this time of the year, you don't expect to see that.
You don't expect to see that, right. Yeah, it's not common. As we were saying, that previously the record for the number of 50-degree days in January is only four, and we had three of those days this month. So, and it's been cold this month as well. So,
and is it the... Can we attribute any of this sort of trend to climate?
So it's driven by the general circulation of the atmosphere. And in the case that we're seeing now, where you have the meandering jet stream, that can bring cold air out of the Arctic into our region. Now, there is some hypothesis, and I know John is a little skeptical about this, that with the Arctic sea ice going away, that it's causing our jet stream to meander more. Which could bring colder air down out of the polar regions into the upper Midwest areas.
And John Martin just joining us now. John, thanks.
Hey,
well, let me turn your microphone on.
Oh, so don't do that.
So you can talk. Well, what do you think about that?
Yeah, Steve, I think accurately gave my view of it. I think there's a lot of interesting ideas out there about what might be behind some of these cold snaps, but I think that we just don't know whether or not things have been altered in such a way as to really fully invest in any of those ideas right now. Sort of incomplete thinking, but it's a good start to the thinking. So
yeah,
I'm happy
so it's a good
about
way
that.
To debate it, and
exactly.
We know the questions to ask in order to go along with that theory,
right.
Or try and find
and
out.
And that's what science
it's
is all about. It's an argument. It's an argument among.
It's not an argument, John.
It's an argument. It's an argument that Steve always wins. It's an argument among respected colleagues, and what we don't. You know, give any ground to whether we think it's right or wrong. We tell what we think.
Well, we've got callers online, and we'll be back with those callers right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at climate and weather with our two weather guys, Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, as is our other guest, John Martin, professor in that department as well, former chair of it. Weather or climate questions, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. We also always like to see your weather photos. And, you know, quite a few callers online. Let's take some calls.
All right.
Steve in Brookfield, we go to you first. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hello.
What's on your mind?
A couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, I heard a term called zone creep, planting zones and so forth. And, you know, because things are warming up, the earth is warming up and so forth, and our zones are actually starting to change. Like a zone 5 now would be a zone 6. Is that still happening, or is this a real thing? Or
it's definitely a real thing, and I think they just changed it in 2012, where essentially, as you're saying, they took the zones and generally shifted them northward a bit. So my guess is they probably do that every 5 to 10 years, revisit it again. Yeah, so I would imagine in another couple of years we'll be looking at the, I think it was the EPA that actually did it, something coming out of them.
Maybe they'll move in the other direction.
Phil Pelletieri, when we talk insects once in a while, he always says, sooner or later we're going to find out that the governor has moved Missouri to Wisconsin.
Yeah. Right.
Well, he's not doing anything to stop it.
There we go, Steve. Thanks for calling. Eric in Beloit, it's your turn. Hi, Eric.
Oh, great. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I have a question about weather manipulation, but before you get panicky, years ago, I remember that cloud seeding was such a was a supposed to be a huge thing for bringing rain to the deserts. And I've been reading about activities in that area for some time and curious, and I can't find many examples where it's been applied successfully. I did find a couple of cases where there was a city, I think it was during the Olympics, that they intercepted incoming rain systems with cloud seeding so it wouldn't rain on the city. It would rain beforehand. But that's about the only example I can think of. Is this still a topic of research? Are people still thinking about this? Or
yeah. What about it?
I would have been nervous to make an answer here, except just by chance. I got an invitation, because I'm an alumni of University of Washington, to come to the Peter Hobbs lecture in February. It's being, he was my PhD advisor at Washington, and now he's deceased. One of his former students, a colleague of mine at the time, is from the University of Wyoming, and he's going to talk about exactly this question. And the interesting thing, to make a long story short, is that for years it was impossible to determine whether or not a seeded cloud did anything more than an unseeded cloud. However, now, funny enough, the detailed look into the clouds that we can get from numerical models at really high resolution is proven, he says, Botgiat says, beyond a doubt that there is some positive impact. The question is whether it's economically beneficial. That is still debatable. But there is some positive impact of seeding clouds. And you can tell that now because the numerical models are so good at looking at the clouds.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating because just the other day I had seen an article on that. And so I tagged it as, got to go read this to see if anything has changed about it. But right, there was, and it may be that you need the numerical models to actually do the studies because there are so many variables
that
have to be controlled in order to be able to pull out the signal.
Yeah.
For our caller, what was this fellow's name again, the colleague?
Bart Geertz. His last name is spelled G-E-E-R-T-S. He's at the University of Wyoming. You can probably find him on their website.
Yeah.
He has some really interesting new results. As I say, I think he still leaves the question of whether or not it's financially or economically viable out there. Yeah. I don't know if that's determined, but there is some discernible effect.
When is the meeting?
February 18th. I can't go.
Oh, this one.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So it'd be wonderful if you could take desert areas or areas that were...
Or it would be dangerous.
Right? Yes,
because,
right. Absolutely.
Dangerous?
We don't know as much as we think we know.
That's right. That's right.
So what are the side impacts? If you're going to make it rain in one place, right?
Or you're going to take away rain from someplace
that's
else.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And what's amazing about this story, more broadly than just cloud seeding, I'm doing a biography on a famous... scientists from the mid-20th century, and right after World War II, flush with victory, the Allied nations were thinking, hey, we've got this atomic bomb in the United States. Maybe we can figure out how to control large-scale weather systems by exploding bombs around in the atmosphere. This was actually the motivation for numerical weather prediction. That was a secondary byproduct of a desire to control the weather. You had to know how your weather was going to be affected by setting off 10,000 megaton bombs in various parts of the atmosphere. Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah. I didn't know that, right? Yeah.
Well, back to believable here. And Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Sarah, hi. What's on your mind?
Hey, Larry. Hi, weather guys. First of all, I have a cold and I might be spacey. I have a friend at work who is into this website called The Watcher. So I took a look at it, and it's so interesting, and it compiles extreme weather events and also earthquakes, volcanoes from all over the world. But I was wondering if I was getting the drift from it that maybe they play up the extremeness of it, of some things. But I really don't know. And like blizzards in Iran and 63 waterspouts off the coast of Greece, and first of all, how weird is that number of waterspouts? And second, do you know of this website, and do you have any opinion about it?
No, I've never been to it.
Me either. Yeah. I've never heard of it.
And 63 waterspouts, wow, that to me sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it seems like a lot. Although the Aegean is filled with little islands, and so you get a cold air outbreak over the Aegean Sea, it's probably the perfect place to get multiple waterspouts spun up by all the orography.
And then how many did you see? Was that over a 12-hour period? Over a 12-hour period, I could certainly believe it.
Yeah.
As opposed to looking out your window and seeing 63 waterspouts.
Yeah.
The name of it's The Watchers website?
Yeah. That's interesting. I'm going to go check it after lunch now to see. I don't know how we'll report back to you, Sarah, but next time we're on, we'll probably say something like, hey, The Watchers is real, or The Watchers is a little bit hyperbolic, one or the other.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. And John, your favorite holiday is coming up.
Yes, it's Friday night. I'm having a euchre night at my house to celebrate.
Are you really
to celebrate? Yeah, I am, with a bunch of people from my graduate group. Yeah. Yeah, Groundhog Day. I love the idea that we surrender our expertise to a furry little rodent who doesn't know anything. But, you know, maybe
does it know how to play euchre?
Huh?
Does it know how to play euchre?
You better know how if you're playing in my house. That's
no, no,
I'm
does the furry little rodent know how to play?
I don't know. It's a low-stakes game, but I don't think rodents will be allowed. And my cats would probably object to his presence anyway.
Well, what about bomb cyclones? You know, let's talk about that for a minute before we go back to the phones. Cyclone bombs, but it's bomb cyclones, right, John?
Yeah, that's this word seems to have reappeared in the popular news.
And it sounds so cool.
Right, and it sounds as if it was created this year for some sort of a climate catastrophe and all the rest of this. Now, we've been using this word for at least 40 years, longer than that, actually. And it's a, you know, sort of a colloquial word for a storm that deepens very, very rapidly. And in the wintertime in the Northern Hemisphere, we get, at the mid-latitudes, we get probably 36 or so of these around the whole hemisphere in a given winter. So it's not an unprecedented sort of event. It's a noteworthy event, especially when it does that rapid development and spreads heavy snow over a heavily populated area like the Middle Atlantic up to New England. But it's not unprecedented.
Yeah. It's not. Okay.
No, not even close.
How much snow did they get?
That was, some places got 3 feet of snow.
Yeah,
I think,
they got a lot.
In the lower mid-Atlantic Appalachians. So there was a lot of snow out of that thing.
I wanted to go back to you, Steve, for a minute, because that volcano that's been erupting in the Philippines for a couple of weeks has raised some questions among people's minds. Officials say this may last for a few months.
Yeah.
Will this have an effect on global weather?
Generally, not at this point, because if you look at it, as impressive as it is in terms of the lava and the smoke that's coming out, that smoke's only getting, or ash is only getting up a couple of miles above the ground, which means it may affect local temperatures if it blocks out the sun or changes visibility and causes traffic problems that way. But if you remember back in 91, when Pinatubo in that same area had an explosive blow up, that actually cooled the global planet because it got the material up into the stratosphere where it could spread out globally, whereas the current one right now, it's just the smoke
couple
is staying.
A couple of miles isn't far enough.
Isn't far enough to spread it around the planet.
It'll
wash out in the storm, any kind of storm it'll interact with.
Yeah.
But it's something to watch because I think they're still looking at it having the potential to explode violently.
And the picture of the thing, it's like
picture.
A first grader's depiction of a volcano.
Yeah.
Perfectly conical.
Perfectly.
And then smoke and fire out the top.
Yeah,
of it.
it's just amazing.
Incredible.
It's just like you said, it's like a kindergarten drawing.
It is.
It's perfect. Yeah.
My daughter had to do a demonstration for her speech class in high school, and so I helped her make one of those volcanoes.
Oh, with
and
old,
she did a demonstration on how to make one. And
with vinegar and baking powder or whatever it is.
Cool.
Right?
All that. It was really kind of cool.
Yeah, those are
awesome. Man. Let's see. Have we got Cindy and Verona up here, Jill? Let's see. No, I guess we don't. Well, all right, we have a new phone system. And so things sometimes work and sometimes they don't necessarily
sometimes they hang up on people.
They but sometimes necessarily work well.
I will testify to how awesome it looks. I will say.
I wish we should take a picture of it and put it up, post it up on Facebook. Oh man. So what's the forecast for the next few weeks?
Well, next few days, if I can do that first, it's going to be cold. We're going to be back to a colder than normal, I think. Today is getting colder as the day wears on, it seems to me.
It sure does.
It was colder on the way back from class than it was at the bus stop. So we'll be down into our single-digit lows overnight and highs maybe around 20 the next couple of days. For the next few weeks, I won't tell you that I've really looked that far ahead. We can't really do that with any great sense of confidence. However, our column this week in the Wisconsin State Journal addressed this very issue. I think by the time you get to mid-February, you're done with real risk of major, major cold air outbreaks anymore. We'll see nothing like we saw at the end of December, early January, most likely again this winter. Just it's impossible for that to be maintained, that kind of cold air production at high latitude after about mid-February.
Because of?
Sun comes up, the day is longer, all sorts of different reasons related pretty much to just that, the cosmology of the Earth's position relative to the sun, and it's over.
And as far as my outlook goes, I think I'm going to wait till Friday morning to make that.
Well, that's right.
Yes. Well, Steve, yes,
Jimmy the groundhog,
he wants to know, and the groundhog's going to tell him that almost 6 weeks to the day is the spring equinox.
Right. So,
it's a real genius stroke by the rodent community.
Well, I want to go back to this bomb cyclone business. Why do you think there was so much media? The media made so much attention to it.
It's a good question. I wish I knew. We have one of our graduates is now the head of the Capital Weather Gang for the Washington Post. Jason Samenow does a great job. He's coming to give a talk here in the spring. It's going to be great to have him here. He had a comment about. He always makes comments about not only the current weather, but about forecasts, especially for the D.C. area, if things are getting interesting. And he made a comment about, this looks like it could be a really big storm. However, somebody will pull this out of context and turn it into some big thing. He was right about that.
He was right, yeah.
And I don't really know how it went from his initial comment to this explosion of attention around New Year's, but it did.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I don't know. I wish I knew that.
Yeah. Well, it to me, it was... Well, it's probably a way to I don't know if it's a way to sell newspapers. It's a way to, it may be.
It's clickbait, they call it, right now.
Clickbait.
Yeah, but it's verbal, right? It's not necessarily online. And, you know, it did impact a lot of people. So I'm sure a lot of people had interest in it. But, you know, again, being from the East Coast, I feel like I can say this. They really stretched that out on the East Coast. Whereas if it would have happened in the Midwest, it would be like, get your galoshes on and go shovel the driveway.
We do take, a more sober approach to substantial weather events in this part of the country than they do on the East Coast. I think it's population density that does it.
Yeah, that could be.
Well, let's go to Keith in Edgar, Wisconsin next. Keith, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I was wondering how often... do these very large, and I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, a derecho. How often do these occur on the scale of what made the news here 4 or 5 years ago? It started in the Midwest and blew all the way to the East Coast.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to remember now. We did a map in our intro weather book about how often you get those a year, and I think it's on the... It's less than half a dozen a year.
Yeah,
it's probably like two or three years about all that you really get, particularly the ones that go that far that are intense.
Yeah.
And again, for those who are wondering, these are associated with thunderstorms, where you get these really strong winds associated as the thunderstorm propagates from, in the case you're referring to, from Minnesota all the way to the New England area.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Just an amazing
D.C.
event.
Area, too. I think
it was
DC
mostly
area.
Down in the mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, that's right. Because everybody was, nobody on the East Coast seemed to know what it was.
Yeah, right. Just an amazing event. So that kind of storm that has that sort of a track length is probably a once in 100 years type of thing or something on that order. But, you know, the ones that are the really big blowdowns in the Lake of the Woods area of Minnesota and some of that forest up there that are almost routine. You hear something like that every couple of years. There's a fairly small scale event, but of great ferocity that does a lot of damage to the woods up there. So,
I saw a thing on Indian mounds down 1,500 years ago. And trying to distinguish them from these blowdowns of the giant trees and the root balls that come up. And they have, like, two of them that they can make note of, which is why I wondered how often do these occur.
Yeah, interesting. I think Steve's got it right on. They're half a dozen or less per year of sort of a real substantial, more than regional impact, more than local impact, I mean.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Joe in Viroqua next. Hi, Joe.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Yes, I live in Viroqua. And I've listened to the La Crosse weather forecast for 30, 40 years or so. And about 20, 30 years ago, the average low temperature was either it was 5 or 6 degrees above zero. And this right now, we're in the coldest time of the year right now. And our current low average temperature is up to 9 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So we've gone from either 5 or 6 degrees up to 9.
Yep.
Yep, that's the big impact we're seeing in the Wisconsin and in the upper Midwest in general, is our cold temperatures have been warming up at night. We're not as cold as we used to be, particularly nighttime.
Yeah. And it's very apparent, and anybody that can't appreciate or realize that they're off on the moon.
Yeah, it's willful ignorance, because the data speaks very loudly, and people are not cheating when they take observations. And the shift is done every 30 years. Isn't that right?
They
have a 30-year running mean. Yep. So you, it's done every 10 years, but they update it every 30.
Right, yeah.
So that's probably part of the story, too.
Yeah. Joe, thank you very much for calling. Mike in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. I think that one of your guests suggested that there is no further chance of a sustained cold snap, but I don't know if they could recall or heard of the February of 82, which was entirely below zero, except for a few times that it managed to get to zero.
Yeah, no. I want to make sure that I said what I meant to say, which is that it's very unlikely that you get another one. It does still happen. You are exactly right. This is a classic example of one. And there's no way to say that this year won't be another example of an unusual February month-long cold snap. But they do happen. February 1969 was like that, where I grew up in Massachusetts. So they do happen. They're just, it's just very difficult for that to happen with regularity. So
There we go. Thanks, Mike.
So if it does happen, be sure to call back and remind John.
Listen, I'll be a fan. Believe me, this is my favorite season of the year. If it happens, I'm thrilled. But if it doesn't, I'm not surprised.
Dean in Prairie du Chien. Hi, Dean.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Good. I want to know if when they launch spaceships up into space, if that affects the weather.
That's a good question. And I'd have to say no, because we don't launch many, so I think to have that kind of impact, because when they do take off, they do put gases and things like that into the atmosphere. So you would have to be launching a lot in order to see the impact, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
No. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Larry from Chautauqua called to ask what to call a ring around the moon. What's the problem?
I've heard of them called as halos. Isn't that right?
It would be a halo or a corona as well.
Oh,
you
corona,
can see it.
Yeah.
It's not as a corona won't be as separate from the moon. It'll be multicolored.
Yeah.
And a ring, it tells us generally that there's ice crystals up there. And in folklore forecasting, it'll tell you that there's some rain coming, because it's associated leading a warm front usually, I think.
It's probably pretty darn accurate.
Yeah, and it's not that rare. I mean, it's kind of rare. I think I've only seen a couple in my life, because you probably need a good full moon to be able to really have enough light to see the ring.
Yeah, I've seen it a few times too. It's very dramatic, and then it shrinks.
And
I think
it shrinks.
The smaller it gets, more likely you're closer to the precipitation, because the clouds are getting thicker and so on.
Since we're running a little short of time, Dave wonders where he can find global temperatures online. Where do you go online to find global temperature information?
I would go to NOAA, climate.gov is another government-run site that has good data on it.
NOAA or climate.gov.
.gov.
And sure you have the .gov, otherwise who knows what you'll get.
Yeah, right, that's right.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, Julie sent us something on Facebook. I've enjoyed listening to the weather guys. I'm delighted to say my son, Ilya Morrow, is now a student in John's weather class.
Oh, all right.
I must say I'm jealous. Ilya and his grandma Mary have enjoyed taking a weather class during Grandparents University.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
And like so that.
They've been in our building, I bet.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you for that. What do you call them? Shout-outs. I'm not hip enough to know what that is, but thank you. That's very nice.
Well, here we are, out of time again. Guys, thanks so much. You'll be back January. You'll be back the last Monday of February, and we'll do it all over again. Thank you, Steve and John. Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, John Martin, professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Great to have them along. They'll be back the last Monday of February. Tomorrow at this time, we'll have some tips for finding a financial advisor, so I hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.